This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
Harun's the caliph everyone's heard of, the caliph of the 1001 Nights, Tennyson's good Harun al-Rashid. But what do we know about him? We think we know his reign was the golden prime of the caliphate, an empire that stretched from Central Asia to Libya when Harun inherited it. A goodly place, a goodly time, for it was in the golden prime of good Harun al-Rashid, to quote Tennyson again. But how good was it? Well, the idea of a golden prime is one which grew in retrospect, and maybe it's just a way of finding a focal point to fix on in the terribly complicated 600-year history of the caliphate. Harun reigned for little more than 20 of those 600 years, from 786 to 809, and a lot of people, including me, would say that after him, much of the best was yet to come in art, science and literature. We identify Harun with Baghdad, and assume that his Baghdad must have been fairly marvellous, as in the 1001 Nights. But was it? It's hard to say because nothing's left of Harun's Baghdad physically. But we do know that the city he preferred for the last 10 years of his life was Raqqa in Syria, upriver from Baghdad near the caliphate's northwest frontier with the Byzantine Empire, where archaeologists have uncovered not just palaces but factories. Now that's something to get excited about, the sinews of industry in the late 700s. But we don't know that Harun himself played any part in boosting 8th-century technology. The truth is that what we know about Harun from stories is one thing, and what we know about him from medieval history books is another, and maybe modern archaeology will tell us something else again. The Harun of medieval chronicles is a weak figure for much of his adult life, who almost allows the caliphate to slip through his fingers, and who's dominated by his mother and his wife Zubaydah, and lets his empire be run by a bureaucracy that's dominated by the Barmakid family. Very late in his reign, he makes his bid for independence, throws the Barmakids into jail, and murders his favourite, Ja'far. But he makes a poor job of planning for the future. Because there's no rule of succession, he promises the office of caliph to his and Zubaydah's son, Amin, and half the empire to Amin's half-brother, Ma'mun, whose mother was a slave. After his death, the brothers go to war. Baghdad's reduced to rubble, and Ma'mun has Amin killed and grabs the throne, setting a dynastic precedent. On this showing, the political legacy of the historical Harun was anything but glorious, and his golden prime, if it was one, was short. He died in his 40s. The timeless Harun of the 1001 Nights seems to have been born quite soon after the death of the real Harun. This is the Harun of social memory. He embodies the good old days that never were but might have been, a past that can act as a beacon in later, troubled times. He's not just a benevolent ruler, but he does all the things a ruler should to make society civilised. He's a patron of scholars and poets. Above all, he's a romantic hero, a man with a tender heart and a lover of beauty, especially beautiful slave girls who are clever and highly educated and skilled in music and poetry. And he's not just a lover, but a loving and beloved husband. By his side, through thick and thin, stands his consort, his cousin Zubaydah, wise, generous, devout, a very grand and independently very rich lady, who undertakes spectacular public works, particularly along the pilgrim road to Mecca, and is remembered for them long and gratefully in her own right. This Harun is very much alive today, and not just in storybooks, but in long-running historical dramas on Arabic TV, which can be accessed on YouTube. The Harun of TV, and his family and courtiers and subjects, are made to explore their sensibilities, confront their dilemmas, test their loyalties. They live in treacherous times, surrounded by violence. But out of their tragedies and compromises, they manage to create art and moral beauty. Obviously, this televised version of Harun and his people is meant as a mirror for Arabs today. Harun on TV and the Harun of medieval stories have some things in common. Like the people in Shakespeare's history plays, they're the focus of dramas and choices and ideas about human potential that resonate with all of us. So how did we get from the Harun of history to the Harun of storytelling? And are they the same person? The histories agree that Harun was a mummy's boy. His mother had been a slave concubine called Khizuran, the reed, because of her slender figure. And his father, the glamorous Caliph Mahdi, very unconventionally, freed her and married her. After this romantic start, things went downhill. Mahdi died young, leaving his two sons by Khizuran to succeed each other as caliph. We don't know their exact ages when this happened, but they were probably only in their late teens. They were named for the biblical and Quranic brothers Moses, Musa, and Aaron, Harun, which ought to have been a good omen. But these two grew to hate each other. Musa had a baby son and wanted the caliphate to pass to him, and he bullied and humiliated Harun instead of treating him like an heir apparent. Harun was in danger of his life. At this point, Khizuran took control. She'd been influential in Mahdi's day. But Musa insulted her and told her to stick to womanly occupations and not meddle in affairs of state. This was more than personal. It was a threat to the vested interests that had grown up in Mahdi's reign. And Khizuran and the Barmakids joined forces and plotted to get rid of Musa and make Harun caliph. Soon Musa died. Some accounts say Khizuran poisoned him. Another version is that she had him smothered by making a slave girl put a pillow on his face and sit on it. The prosaic version is that he died of a stomach ulcer. Musa's death was followed by the reign of the Barmakids rather than the reign of Harun. The Barmakids were aristocratic Persians, but in spite of their exotic background as hereditary guardians of a great Buddhist shrine in Central Asia, by this time they were acculturated as Arabic-speaking Muslims and were well ensconced in the caliphal government and determined to stay there. They were practiced statesmen who, Jeeves-like, took the strain out of their master's life. And they were fabulously rich and generous, and could buy loyalty on the grand scale. They were also fosterkin to Harun, who, as an infant, had been suckled by a Barmakid lady, and the milk tie was considered almost equivalent to a blood tie. Another tie was that the grand old man of the family, Yahya, had been Harun's moral tutor and guardian. Harun even addressed him as father. Yahya became his vizier, and Yahya's two sons swapped the remaining roles between themselves. Fadl, Harun's milk brother, was solid and competent, but Ja'far was brilliant and charming, and became Harun's closest male companion. Given these intense and involved family and emotional ties, it's not surprising that the history of Harun's reign tended to be written as a family drama. Hard facts are difficult to come by, because the same events are accounted for in often wildly different ways. But nearly all accounts draw on the storytelling archetypes that go with family relationships and explain motives in terms of personalities and feelings, fear, jealousy, and love turned to hate. The more lurid accounts of Musa's death are one example of this. The question of why Harun turned against Yahya and Fadl and murdered Ja'far is another. One explanation that makes good psychological sense is that Harun felt infantilized and entrapped by his dependence on the Barmakids and was jealous of their, and especially Ja'far's, high public profile. A story that's told as a metaphor of this is that Harun tried to turn the tables on the Barmakids and make Ja'far his hostage by marrying him secretly to his sister Abasa and then forbidding the couple to sleep together. Of course they disobeyed, and Harun, in righteous fury, murdered Ja'far to avenge his honour. Historians have been poo-pooing this tale for centuries, but they still haven't managed to find a way of explaining the fall of the Barmakids that makes political sense. Another explanation of history in terms of personality comes in a fairy tale story about the fate of Harun's son Amin. As a matter of historical fact, just as Musa broke his oath to his brother Harun and named his own son as his successor in his place, so Amin was to break his solemn public oath to pass the succession not to his son, but to his brother, Ma'mun. Arranging the succession between his sons had been Harun's main political project during his long period of power-sharing with the Barmakids. But the arrangement was doomed. It went against human nature, or at any rate against the character of the people concerned. Again, the situation's expressed in a story that's a metaphor, this time for what happens when power is devolved on the morally weak. Zubaydah is supposed to have had a dream the night she conceived Amin. Three women appeared and sat by her side and placed their hands on her belly and predicted what her child would be. Vain, treacherous, foolish. On the night she gave birth to him, the same women appeared and made the same prediction. On the night she weaned him, they came for the last time and predicted his vices would bring about his downfall and death. Despite all the good horoscopes the astrologers cast, and despite the care given to Amin's upbringing, the prediction came true. The moral the story is given is that character is destiny, but it could be read the other way round, as meaning that knowledge of one's destiny can shape or warp one's character. The oath binding Amin to pass the succession to Mamun had been sworn first when he was 5 and again when he was 15, so that breaking it when he succeeded Harun in his early 20s was something he'd had plenty of time to contemplate. The fact was that power in this period wasn't contained by oaths, still less by laws. It was something each caliph had to grab and shape for himself. So how did Harun handle power with and after the Barmakids? How much power was available for grabbing? By inertia, Harun let the Barmakids get on with the main business of running the state, which meant the continuation of a strong bureaucracy inherited from his father. But he brought in several new things himself. He developed the idea that the caliphate ought to justify itself as a religious office, and he worked to make it resonate with popular piety. He regularly led or sent jihad expeditions against the Christian Byzantines, the ideological arch-enemy. He made many pilgrimages to Mecca and many gifts to the holy places. And so did Zubaydah, who paid huge sums for an engineering and building scheme to renew the water supply of the holy cities and make fresh water available all along the pilgrim route to poor pilgrims travelling on foot. Thanks to her example, raising monuments to advertise acts of charity became standard practice in Islamic states, and Zubaydah was ahead of her time as a lady of the ruling house in being the figurehead for the regime's good works and thereby embodying its dynastic virtues, one of the important political roles that women were to continue to play. From the point of view of statecraft, then, Harun's main contribution was symbolic, but powerfully so. And the precedent he and Zubaydah set would be exploited by other Muslim rulers for centuries to come. Justification of the regime by works, which besides charity and holy war, included the idea that the regime should take the administration of justice under its symbolic protection by nominating a chief judge. Just as family and politics go together in Harun's career as a ruler, so it's difficult to separate the public and the private in his wider legacy. Like his father, he loved music and poetry, and he had a half-brother and sister who were both poets and musicians of professional standard. Their poems are still read today. The arts were a private pleasure, but it was unthinkable for a person of status not to subsidise them and display them at least to an elite public at his court. And Harun continued a tradition of making princely support of the civilising arts a public badge of legitimacy, another practice that would last for centuries. So, in the end, Harun does seem to deserve the place given to him by social memory. He did help to maintain a lasting ideal of civilization. He and Zubaydah did show future rulers how regimes can connect with the public through grand gestures. And above all, the life dramas of Harun, Zubaydah, their children and the Barmakids fed and educated popular imagination for centuries, and still do, thanks to television and the internet.